I need to change the email. And I need to take through off. Yeah, I don't think Gina, we don't know if Gina's coming.
I don't think Gina's coming.
So not Gina, maybe, and not Heidi.
Okay.
I forgot about the last
time. I wasn't sure if Gina was going to make it or not.
She's a pastor in Linda's church.
Oh, yeah, I remember she mentioned that. Yeah, I have not met her.
She's a doll. You would love her.
Where's Joseph?
Jack came to see her.
Good. Oh, thank
for
you.
Other people.
Yes. Oh, Joseph, I got one. That's an Aura newsletter. Just to spread the word.
Didn't you write behind?
I did. Okay, everyone. Having a forum and at the 2 minutes past 4:30, we were going to be very efficient on this meeting. We have a number of things, but we have a request for one person who needs to leave us early, so we're going to try to move as much of the significance as possible.
Excuse me for not letting you know sooner, but I also have to leave Rudy's spot at the same time.
We'll just be as efficient as we can. We're aware of where we are. And so with that, we'll open the meeting with the Ashland Housing and Human Service Commission. And the first thing on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. So everyone's had a chance to read those.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of minutes.
That was a lot of minutes.
It sure was.
So that was very good.
We need to update the initial decision that the legal department makes. So I had a question under public forum, but what is it? It's where it says Linda Reed and Rich Rohde discussed what direction is being taken with legal department of Ashland. Linda Reed to update commission with decision the legal department makes. And I wonder, do we have an update on that? On what
we do, and I could do it whenever. We can do it now, or I could do it at the update.
Okay, I just know that was something I had a question about. But other than that, I can move to approve the minutes.
Can we have a motion to approve?
Second.
All right. All those in favor of approving the minutes as presented, raise your hand. Any opposed? Any abstentions? The minutes would be approved. Sarah.
I would like to ask if we could entertain either at this meeting or the next meeting option of moving this meeting either a half an hour earlier on the fourth Thursday. I have a regular fourth Thursday meeting at 6:30 that sometimes I have to actually chair, so I do need to be there.
Jim and I were wondering how you were going to do that.
Yeah,
fly from here to.
I thought I would make a request, and I don't know if you want to discuss it now or at a next meeting, but I wanted to put it out there.
Well, let me just ask, because I know that everybody has different time slots, and we've had this time slot for a very long time. I don't think we want to change it very much, but this is the straw vote. This isn't a vote. But how many people would make it at 4 as opposed to 4:30?
I might be a little bit late on that.
Definitely. But I have kind of the same requirements as well, but it's not quite as necessary for me to be there at that meeting. So if we didn't find a way to get to it, then I could probably still make it.
Well, I didn't quite understand that, but you're saying you could be here at 4 if we did 4 to 6.
Definitely.
Okay.
I might be a little bit late sometimes.
So,
what about Linda?
Heidi isn't here.
It actually is fine for us. Liz actually covers the front counter, so it would be a little impactful to the other front counter people. But it probably would be fine for us. And for me, I mean, I can just schedule it out. And we have, over the years, we have adjusted the schedule, I think actually back in the same manner several years ago for someone to help accommodate someone's schedule. So it's not,
Do we need to check and see if the room would be open?
And it should be, yeah.
So Heidi and Gina, we haven't talked.
Yeah, and if you want, I can send out an email to them and make sure that would be okay with them.
Well, let's just see. Let's throw this out as a possibility. Can we start our next meeting at 4 with it viewed as a trial meeting? And then if everybody gets to learn to live with it, we can make it into a regular thing. Does that sound all right with folks?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I super appreciate it.
Not seeing any public forums. We're here by ourselves, so we'll skip that section. And we get to introduce 2 new commissioners. It's so fun.
That's
so
wonderful.
I wonder, do you need us to introduce ourselves, or would you each like to?
I think generally that's what we do, is we kind of go around. Everyone gets to say a little bit, so they get to know you guys too.
Okay, but then as we go around, then when we get to our new commissioners, they can add a little bit more into what they're doing. Okay, so does somebody want to start the round?
Sure.
All right.
I'll start.
Jackie.
I'm Jackie Bachman. Hi. And I've been in Ashland for about 4.5 years now. And I'm a retired special education teacher and administrator. And I've had the pleasure of serving on the city council for 9 months in an appointed position. So that really gave me a little bit of an inside view on things. And now I am on the board for AURA, Options for Helping Residents of Ashland, and I'm on the board for the Ashland Culture of Peace Commission. And I'm also very involved with OLLI, which is the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And I'm an improver, so so I know the antics, at SOU, and yes, and I do performances around town in various capacities. And I will be Madame Tarot in Cafe Noir in December, so y'all can. We raised over $16,000 this last year with 4 performances. So I'll be back in my red wig, so in my satin dress.
So you're saying you don't just sit home and watch soaps?
No, I'm in the soap. I gotta be in the soap.
My name is Erin Crowley. I have lived in Ashland for 1.5 years, so kind of a newbie. Moved here from Portland. I'm a pastor. And I'm almost official, actually.
Oh, I saw your picture.
I have a little ceremony coming up. Awesome. But so I moved here to plant a new church here in Ashland, which I am in the process of doing. Super exciting. My background, though, before being a church planter, is that my ministry work was always in local and global outreach, which is what drew me here. So I worked a lot with homelessness and affordable housing, and then also with developing nations and trying to support growth and development there.
I'm Sarah Spansale. More background. I grew up here in Rogue Valley, so born and raised. Stayed here until I was about 21 and went to Portland for 9 years. There I worked in energy efficiency, managing a contract for Energy Trust of Oregon, running their incentive program in the office there, so lots of office skills. My husband and I decided to start a family, and so we wanted to move back here, be closer to my family. And so I've been here for 5 years now, back in Ashland, and I'm really lucky to get to be in this community again. And I did graduate from Ashland a really long time ago, almost 20 years. I'm older than I look.
Yeah, you look young. Yeah.
And I have 2 kids, 3 and 5, Oslo and Simon, and Simon's going to kindergarten this year, just finished his last day of preschool today, which is very exciting.
Wow.
And I'm really involved, with a lot of the grassroots groups throughout the valley, in some capacity or another, and try to support them, and that's kind of been my work that I don't necessarily get paid for, and I've also done some campaign work that I did get paid for a little bit in the last couple of years as well. So that's kind of where I'm at, and I'm really excited to help Ashland and be on this commission and, help the community.
Well, so can we have our 2 staff, wonderful staff, give a little...
Come on, Liz. Give it to us, Liz.
My name is Liz Hamilton. I was born and raised in Ashland. I also graduated from Ashland High many years before you.
And produces these wonderful minutes and notes,
yeah,
and the thing is just the vital heartbeat of what we do. So
yes, thank you.
glad mm-hmm. I'm doing it the right way.
Thank you.
And Liz came to us from Welburn Electric.
I did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I have 20 years in construction. Oh, yeah, for what company?
He became a journeyman last summer for CoGas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was with Welburn for a long time and then came here to Ashland and has lots of experience with permitting and all that stuff, which is
most of the contractors that come to the counter.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
we were lucky to get her. And my name is Linda Reed, and most of you know me. I'm the housing program specialist, and I've spent a lot of time with all of you chatting. How you and
help!
Yep.
Would there be any way that I would be able to go last?
Sure.
Thanks. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
That's it. I'll spare you the, since I'm 75, spare you the first 25 years. 40 years. I moved here in 95, so I've been here 4 or 5 years. Cam, most recently, we're from Portland, where I was the director of Lutheran Family Service of Oregon and accepted the job of the director of Family Solutions. And I was there for 20 years and retired. I'm still a licensed clinical social worker. But I'm dormant in that respect, and I'm on the board of Rogue Retreat in Medford. Soon to be in Grants Pass as well, and hoping to be in Ashland.
Okay. Rich Rory, we have pretty similar backgrounds in some ways, the age and time and space in Ashland and everything, but been here 34 years and was a community organizer with Unite Oregon Now, was Oregon Action, and had a passion for affordable housing and housing issues, and so somehow that's how I'm here. Not somehow, I really wanted to be here.
That's right.
So it's wonderful, y'all. And do you want to say anything?
Oh, wait, Linda.
Oh, Linda. Then we'll go to Jess.
I haven't talked.
I'm sorry.
This is very interesting because I'm learning things about people that I have been working with for a while that I didn't know. So, I am also a minister. I have been in Ashland for about 4.5 years. It must have come about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And my ministry has always been with young adults. So I ran a sort of intentional living community in Berkeley with young people who both lived in the house, and we did, you know, church in the house. Did some of that in Ashland and really just kind of reached my retirement moment. I feel like I don't want to do this anymore, but, you know, in the world of ministry, you're kind of ordained for life, so it kind of keeps going. So I'm speaking around the country quite a bit right now. I'm a caregiver for my husband who's disabled, and that's kind of the new thing that's going on in my life, but is taking, I would say, a lot of my energy. I also own the Carlisle Garden Suite, which is a small hotel just on East Main.
It's lovely.
Yes,
just lovely.
Thank you. Which is kind of cool for being on this commission, because I feel like in Ashland, it's kind of, especially around issues of homelessness, it's been like the hospitality industry and the housing advocates have kind of been in different, very different camps, and I feel like I've got like a foot in each camp now, and hopefully that will turn into a bridge over time. Yeah, that's my hope. But I like being on this commission. I like being involved with the issues that we're dealing with.
Thanks everybody for that. And also, yeah, it's really just an honor to be here, an honor to be elected onto this, and thanks very much for, I mean, even more elaborate the welcome than I thought. But since I was told that I was able to be on the commission, I've, even though I aim to move back to Ashland, I've had to take a rental in Talent, and so I live in Talent. As of just a few weeks ago, and as far as
so you live where?
Talent.
Oh, in Talent, sorry.
So as far as I know, that may disqualify me from being on this.
It doesn't.
I don't think it does. No.
The only commissions that you would have to live in Ashland to be on would be the Planning Commission and the City Council, which is not a commission.
Okay.
Yep, but all
I think
others.
I saw a rule with that, and I assumed that it applied to all of this.
You're legal.
We welcome people to
don't move any
actually,
further
I thought
out.
That same thing, that you had to live in Ashland to do it.
Not this commission, just the Planning Commission and the City Council. Okay. It's come up before.
I was prepared to basically just, like, leave.
Aww.
Because I didn't think I was able to be on other city commissions anymore.
Oh.
Okay. That's
you could even be on other city commissions if you wanted.
I'll probably be good with this one.
One's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Okay, well, besides that, sorry about that misunderstanding.
That's okay.
It's great to be here. I'm really hoping that I can really work with everybody here to do some mainly just kind of more simple angle from it. Seeing as I haven't gotten my degree or my master's or anything like that yet.
Is that Irish? What do I hear there?
Oh yeah, a bit of that. Mostly just hoping to do a lot of groundwork in and around the commission, and hopefully just engage with the community and focus on a lot of the real basic grassroots stuff mm-hmm. in and around this commission, and do a lot of that.
Yeah.
And thanks for having me.
And are you at SOU?
No.
No.
I'm going to be at some sort of university, probably traveling for a while to RCC first, and then might go to SOU after that.
Mm-hmm.
Good on.
Thanks.
Yep. All right. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks. Sorry for that. Sorry.
That's
all right.
Okay.
Glad you're still here.
Yeah.
Me as well.
So if we look at our agenda, the next thing we have is the CBG Action Plan Review and Approval. So we've already sort of made our recommendations and accepted it. Now we have to have the plan mm-hmm. that says what we just did so that the HUD will look kindly on us. And so, Linda, would you like to... Everybody's got that in your packet. And Linda can read
it. Most of you have done this already before, but for those of you who haven't, there's sort of a cycle that we go through with our CDBG grant funds. We put them out to the public. We go through the application review process and recommendation and award. And then once an award is made, that gets put into what we call the action plan, which gets sent to HUD. And it essentially links to our bigger 5-year consolidated plan of all the sorts of activities that we could do and priorities that we have for this money and how it ties into the needs of the community. And I'm giving a brief overview because we're going to be embarking on drafting a new consolidated plan in the next several months, just because it's time. And so the action plan is like every one of those 5 years that's covered by the consolidated plan, the action plan ties into that and shows HUD this is how we are utilizing the funding, and this is how it relates to what we told you we were going to do before with our 5-year plan. And then it also ties into the citizen participation piece that HUD requires for community development block grants, allowing public input at each stage of the process to make sure that we are taking into consideration the views of low-income and minority people who may feel differently about what we're doing with the money or want to have a time to comment on whether that's a good use of the funds or not. So this is actually a public hearing for people to come and do that. Nobody is here, which is fine. Everybody's happy with what we've done. this is a large document, and it essentially meets the requirements that HUD lays out for us to tell them how we're using the funding. And that's why this document is so large, even though we all sort of know, because we went through the process, who the grantees are and what they're going to do and all of that. So at the end of the program year, so if we think about it like this, the action plan is the beginning of the program year. We're going to do these activities, and then the activities start. And at the end of the program year, we'll review another document that looks a lot like this, but it's called the Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report, which then takes the information from the previous year's action plan and says, okay, this is what we said we were going to do with the money, and this is what we actually did with the money, and here's the sort of outcomes of that and how many people it's helped and how it ties into our larger five-year plan. So we keep going back to that five-year plan. So this is one of those documents in that process, the very beginning document that says this is what we're going to do, and it proposes the number of people to be helped and the ways that they'll be helped. And then in September, we will review a CAPR, but it won't be for these activities. It'll be for the ones that we approved the previous year. So anyway, that's the whole process, and this is a part of that. Do you guys have any questions about that?
Mm-hmm. So on page 7... I came across ESG funds.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked back and I tried to find where it was described and I couldn't find it. And so I looked it up online and there's several definitions for ESG
yes.
funds. Is it emergency shelter grants? Okay.
Yes.
Because there's also emergency solutions grants
yes.
program and environmental, social, and governance
which
funds.
We would not do those ones. And we do. So,
but it's hooked up with
HMIS.
HMIS, yes. So, okay.
And as a clarification, I mean, those are, it's a, all HUD programs, sorry, I have to keep these glass. I need them for reading, but I don't need them for looking at you. All of the HUD programs are supposed to work somewhat together, and all of the grantees are supposed to coordinate with one another, which I would say that we do. Like, Medford gets CDBG funds, and we're all eligible for some other funding as well, but some of that funding doesn't come through like us directly. So there's emergency shelter grants and continuum of care grants, but we don't get that money. Somebody else does. So we are supposed to consult with those organizations and find out how they're using the money, and we're all supposed to work together in that, like, oh, we're all working toward the same goals, and here's all these funding streams, but how are we sort of making sure that all of the needs throughout the communities are getting met.
Is that county, the community of care funding?
Yeah, so the Jackson County, the continuum of care funding is a separate funding source that's offered through HUD, and Jackson County has a continuum of care, which is made up of Medford, Ashland, and Jackson County.
Okay.
And so our mayor is on the continuum of care board, and that money gets applied for through the continuum of care by grantees. It's a pass-through, and then those grantees are awarded. I in the last, for several years, I do review the grant applications for the continuum of care, and then I score them, and then we send all of that information up to HUD, but then HUD ultimately makes the decision.
Do we have any in Ashland? We don't.
Specific money that's coming to Ashland? No. And so, let's see. There's probably...
like the 24/7 shelter through access.
Mm-hmm.
Is that connected to the continuum of care?
No.
No. Okay.
I mean, yes and no. So the continuum of care is really two things. It is a grant fund that comes from HUD in the form of actual money with regulations like CDBG and all of those things. And then there's the structure that is required by HUD, which is called the continuum of care. And the structure is the organizational body that is supposed to bring all these things together. And so the Jackson County Continuum of Care Board is the organizational body that is supposed to convene groups from all over, including, you know, cities like us, like having the mayor or in the sheriff's department and access. And then they're supposed to work to coordinate their services to better serve the homeless population throughout our area. And so part of that is, like, what's needed and how do we get that funding to the right people and what are the projects that are ongoing and how can we create a pipeline? It's really about coordination. So the ESG funds, interestingly enough, actually go to the state of Oregon, and then from the state are provided to our community action agency, which is Access. So we do get some of that money because that's some of the money that went into the shelter.
Right,
the 7-day-a-week shelter. And we also get emergency shelter grant money, which is a little bit different. They all have their own regulations, but those also go through Access. And I can't remember. Those might be specific to rapid rehousing for veterans right now. So there are some other funding streams, and I don't account for them as much because we generally, I mean, while we may benefit in a sort of broad countywide way, we're not, like, getting them ourselves and making decisions about where they go.
Okay.
That was my question. So we get money that goes through Access. Access grants it to agencies in Ashland. It's not administered by the state.
Yeah,
it's administered
right. And I don't know the process by which Access makes those funding decisions. I think there was some talk about an application process, but it's not the same as what we go through. I think they have a lot of discretion in how they use that funding.
But we're, for instance, waiting right now for money to come down from, I think it's HUD, to Access to then come to Aura and
the shelter.
Yeah, to the shelter. And, boy, it's delayed. It was going to come in February, and then it was going to come in April. And, boy, it's very scary with the funding held up because you have people who
are waiting to get those. And we see that with CDBG as well. I mean, CDBG is a separate own standalone, you know, whereas some of those other funding sources also have their own oversight. Continuum of Care grant money, I'm trying to think. So this year, the whole Continuum of Care board structure has been altered dramatically because for a variety of reasons we've been losing money for years. And this year, we finally got some of our money back.
We lose it because we don't use it.
No. HUD has, and we could talk about this as a whole.
No, I know, and I realize you're trying to...
It's okay. I think it's... So in the past, we have had applications. So it's a coordinated application process. We put the NOFA out through the Continuum of Care organization, whatever structure that is, which is now the board, but it wasn't before. And then the applications go out and people apply for that money with whatever their activity is going to be. And for a number of years, we had like four organizations that were doing things that we were supporting. And HUD didn't like that. They wanted us to do something different with the money. They also didn't like the structure that we had. They wanted a different structure and a more formal structure. And it evolved over time is what I would say. It wasn't like always that way, but then they changed it. And they also changed their strategies. Like everyone has to be in HMIS now. You have to have a certain amount of participation in HMIS. You have to do the coordinated entry. That's a new thing that they didn't require before. They would dock us points because we don't have a Housing First program in our community. So, you know, communities that have a Housing First program got more money. So there were a number of things that we needed to change in order to get more money. Some were in our control and some were not. So we did change a lot of things. So this year, the grantees were somewhat the same. We had new applications that we've never had before. And a lot of the grantees who have been funded have continued to be funded, which is okay. One grantee that we lost was Salvation Army. So Salvation Army, Hope House, which some of you are familiar with, which is our only, like, what would be called a truly transitional housing program for just adults, because we have one for teens. Which is, you can stay there for 2 years. It's, you know, it has different requirements that you need to meet, and it's for people coming out of homelessness and then theoretically transitioning into housing. And we used to fund Salvation Army to have a case manager to work in transitional housing. And HUD said, A, we don't like funding people, so that's a point against you, and B, we don't believe transitional housing works, so we don't want to fund transitional housing. You could actually call it something else.
So permanent supportive housing still has a transitional quality to it.
Permanent supportive housing is you can stay there forever,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
We don't have to move you along.
We don't believe transitional housing works.
If you're in HMIS and you're reporting your outcomes, like there are outcomes, when you leave transitional housing, you should be leaving transitional housing into permanent housing, permanent stable housing. You should be leaving with an income. If you came in without an income, you should be leaving with an income, either from employment or from disability or whatever. Like, you now have an income. And you should leave with a job if you, you know, are employable. And people are discharging to the street. And so the numbers look terrible, you know. They're either not going into housing or they're being discharged because they broke a rule, right? Like if you have drug and alcohol issues, you're supposed to be attending, you know, clean and sober, attending classes. You should be working toward finding a job. So there's all these regulations within the transitional housing program, and if you don't meet those, then you get discharged. And if you get discharged, then it shows as you're, you know, you've
been back on the street.
Right. And so how successful was that program? Well, not very. the question is it because transitional housing itself doesn't work,
right,
or is it because there are some other issues that we're not able to deal with, especially when HUD doesn't want to fund a case manager? So we dropped that a long time ago, a couple years ago. We just couldn't take it anymore. So the programs that we still do fund are Home at Last through Rogue Retreat, which is a permanent supportive housing program for people with disabilities.
And by we, you're meaning
the continuum of care.
Countywide.
Yes. So they are still receiving funding. Their funding was maybe drastically cut. We're not quite sure in this go-round because it was a renewal application and HUD doesn't like us to do renewals. They would like them to find other funding sources and for us to do innovative new things with our money. We still fund the Community Works Transitional Living Program for homeless youth and people transitioning out of foster care, which is the only transitional housing program that HUD loves to fund, is for teens. So that one is still fully funded. This year we got a new bonus project, which is really what HUD wanted, which is specific to domestic violence and permanent supportive housing. So it's a partnership between the Housing Authority of Jackson County and Community Works. Specifically providing housing, transitional housing, it's permanent supportive housing, for people's experiencing domestic violence. What else got funded? Rogue Retreat put in an application, but I don't think they got funded, which was too bad because there's this whole hierarchy thing. And who's the last person? Who's the last organization? It is a renewal. TLP, Rogue Retreat. Who am I missing?
Can we roll on?
Yes,
to the,
I'm sorry.
Doing, which is Ashland,
yes.
CDBG, right?
And I would be happy to send out the list of the continuum of care programs that are funded because it does.
That's
so what I would say is this. There are people from Ashland who get help through Home at Last, who live in units that are covered by Home at Last. And there are people in Ashland who get help through Community Works Transitional Living Program. So almost all of the grants go to organizations that are serving the county and within that context.
Not Columbia Care, that wasn't one, was it?
No, Ipsilia is always funded.
Okay, that's where.
Same four people always. Anyway,
okay.
I'll think of it. So anyway, that's what that is about. And so part of this document is to sort of recognize how are we coordinating with the other organizations in the county to really serve our mission, which is low-income, special needs populations. So that's kind of what this document does. And it has to come back here to have a public hearing for public comment and for you all to approve it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm curious under projects why Food Angels is not listed.
Under projects?
On page 16.
Oh, you know
I
what?
I saw it. You're under something.
It is, I saw it.
Yeah, I saw it, but it not,
well,
maybe not here.
They're listed in the first page as one of three,
yes,
applicants, and
right,
then here it says that there's three, mm-hmm, projects.
You know, and that was something.
But then it only has the two.
No. I was really struggling.
Is it because of what we funded? Is that.
No. It's my my database. So it used to be that I actually wrote this document. Like it was, I have a lovely template and there's
okay,
all these things I have to,
good
requirements
catch,
I have to meet. But now this is all done in my HUD database where it gives me these blanks and I fill in the blanks and then I push make this into a printable Word document and it spits this out.
Wow.
Nice.
And this does not look like what I am putting,
yeah,
in on my screen.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm, thank you for calling that,
yeah,
out because
good
I
catch,
think in you saying that I realize why it's not coming out. So I've put it into the boxes. It didn't print out in the boxes, but I think I know why, because it's linking it to something else,
mm,
in another place on the,
yeah,
the back end, and I think I didn't set it up.
It's
right,
on page 15.
And it's also in your introduction on that,
yeah,
page.
Yeah, and on, mm-hmm, page 2.
Yeah. So I think I have to set this up as a new activity in my database, because the other grantees have been grantees before. It's pulling data from old activities and putting it in there. And so because Food Angels has never received a grant, they're not programmed,
mm-hmm,
into the system yet.
Another question.
Mm-hmm.
On page 29, you talk about the ALEAP program, which is the Ashland Low Income Energy Assistance,
yes,
program. And I found out that they have a roundup program. So, and Jim and I have been in that program, you know, so we always round up.
Oh.
And that money then goes into the ALEAP program. But I keep, I've talked to Mark Welch, I've talked to different people. It's not advertised. People don't know about it.
Uh-huh.
And it's such a simple thing. It's pennies, you know, or a dollar, you know, that would round it up. And yet it would provide more money.
Oh,
and
wow.
If you could, I'd really like for you to look into it, because there may be a maximum amount that they're allowing to go into the elite program, so maybe there's a problem with that. But I just think more could be done with that in our community. More people would be willing to give.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I would do that.
You could round up. So you just have to look on your bill, and but it's hard to find. But it, you can round up. Because there's a whole program for that.
Mm. Well, and I wonder if we could put it in, like, the city source. And certainly, you know, when I used to write this document, well, actually, the CAPER is a much better document. But when I used to write it, I could add things in here that HUD doesn't require, right? Like, HUD has its requirements, but all the things that we do may not be captured. Like, in our old CAPERs, we used to capture how many ARUs were created every year as a, as a somewhat affordable housing source, how many condominium conversions there were that were deed restricted into the affordable housing unit, how much money goes into the ALEAP program, and how many people are helped, and how many people with disabilities are helped. So I used to put all that information in there, and I can put information in the narrative section, though I'm limited on how many words I can put in there.
You know, another thing that came up, too, at the budget committee meeting was a question from Councillor Seffinger, and her question, they were talking about property tax. And so Steffi was saying, so can you give us the data on how many of the houses in Ashland are owned by citizens in Ashland versus not citizens in Ashland? And Mark said, no.
Mm.
No.
We've had some similar questions about senior data, senior housing. Just, you know, it's there's a lot of data in the world, but a lot of it doesn't sort of mesh up with the information generally that we want. So you could look at, I mean, we have access to the county website, Smart Map, and we have a GIS department, and they can get a lot of data, too. And they could probably tease out, like, how many people, although it would take, I don't know how hard it would be, you could take the whole every house in the city and have the county data provided, and then have the addresses so that
you'd
some
think
people
the bills, the property tax bill.
Right.
Anyway, I just think it could be really useful information to know that.
But some people may have addresses that are PO boxes, or you know, so they may actually live here.
That's true.
But you don't know because they have a PO box, or that at the stuff goes to that address, though they don't actually reside.
How many people actually do, though? I wonder if it's like hundreds or thousands. I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, census data says that like 3.2% of the housing stock or something is vacation rentals.
What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed
make a motion to approve.
Approve it today?
Yeah. What are all these zeros on page 31?
I was wondering about you.
Let's
see. On page comes three. Out of a computer when we don't need data.
It is odd. I will tell you, the format and all is pretty odd.
I know.
So,
it's very weird.
Yeah.
So this is, okay. So the first one is the total amount of program income that will have been received before the start of the next program year and that has not yet been reprogrammed. So program income is money that we have put out and then has come back in. So for example, St. Vincent de Paul does security deposits. We give them money to do security deposits. And then at different points in time, those security deposits come back. If we get more than $25,000 in security deposits back from them in 1 year, then that becomes program income. And then I have to count it. I mean, I count it anyway. But I have to count it through, I have to count it through this database, tell HUD I got that money. And then I have to decide what we're going to do with it. Are we going to re-grant it out to new people? The agreement we have with St. Vincent de Paul is if any money comes back in, then I will tell them how much it is and they can request it to be used again.
Is this correct, these zeros?
Yes, because we don't get $25,000 back in any
so
given year.
They're all not.
But that's only one thing. So that's just program income. Number two is a Section 108 loan guarantee, which essentially is we can borrow 5 years' worth of our allocation at any given at one time and grant it to one organization. So 5 years of our allocation would be like almost $1 million. So we could take, we could go like, we're going to give the Housing Authority $1 million to build something. We won't get any more money for 5 years because we're borrowing against our future allocations. And we don't, we have never done that. So there's, we've never done that. We don't have proceeds from that. We don't have any urban renewal settlements. And then we have not returned any money to our line of credit. And then we don't have any float funded activities at this time. So these are all things that can happen, okay. But we don't do them.
Okay.
3 minutes.
Okay. Tom, you had a question.
What if we don't approve it?
Let's
good
see.
Question.
If you don't approve it, then it essentially tells HUD that we are doing something very wrong.
Oh.
I really mean, what if we don't approve it today?
Then I will be outside of my timeline for HUD. So I need to give this document to them 45 days before the start of our program year, and it will delay the grantees getting their money and that whole process. Because HUD has its own process. So now I will send this to them, and then they will review it. And then in that time, people can send things to them saying, there is something wrong with Ashland's process. They didn't do, like they could say, they never held a public hearing on comments. And so we never got to weigh in on it.
I move to approve the CDBG action plan review.
Nicely done.
Do you say with corrections, maybe?
With
corrections with, that
oh,
we identified.
That's
right.
Actually
with corrections
ask.
Discussed.
Okay.
Second.
So I mean, we do this so often, periodically, that it. But I think this was really excellent because we got down into some of it, and I think that will help us move on. And I have, after we approve it, I have another suggestion, and other people can add them. But is there any other discussion before we take a vote on approval of this measure for hearing none? All those in favor of approving the HUD app, the HUD report, raise your hand. You don't need them. I don't think you need them. So it looks like it's any opposed. So it looks like it passed.
And, you know, in September when we do the CAPR, that's a meatier document that has more interesting information. It will talk about who got the continuum of grant funds and some other.
So I had a response about the process, and it's just that I had forgotten that this is actually a hearing for that. And I have a MSW social work student in Grants Pass, and she started looking at the Grants Pass CBG applications and that whole thing, and there was a hearing in which no one showed, and she was appalled.
Oh.
Well, I gotta say, for me that really care, for many of us care about participation, when no one shows, it isn't the fault of the people, it's oftentimes what was happening to get people there. And I know, but see, what I think we're also learning is HUD doesn't care. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't care. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, if in the next round, because we wonder why people don't apply for CDBG, and we have, you know, I just see a much more aggressive approach. This is kind of bureaucratic, but I think any time we have an opportunity for a hearing, we ought to really push it a bunch. And I don't know that we did. I didn't see anything anywhere.
Well, it gets posted on the city's website. Right. It gets put. We are required to do a legal notice in the paper. So it's legally noticed in the paper. And when we do the consolidated plan, so our update, which is our 5-year plan, we have to do a more rigorous public outreach process.
Is that when we went to Ashland Hills? We had
no, you know, the last time we did the consolidated plan, and I don't know, I don't think anyone, Rich, you were probably here, but, and Heidi was here. We did, it ended up being winter, and it was cold, and we had a thing down at the Parks Department, the Grove,
Grove.
The Grove.
Grove.
And we did do a mailing to Snowberry Brook and to the mobile home park, and I think maybe a senior facility, maybe Donald B. Lewis, a direct mailing that said we're going to have this event to talk about CDBG, and you know how we could, and which gave a brief overview, like this money is supposed to be used for these things. Come and tell us how you think we should use this money, because we really, it's about how do these people think we should use this money to benefit them. And we did have, we had a gentleman from Talent. We had five people.
Yeah.
So here's my thought. And just without putting any more taxing work on the staff, that as we go forward with CDBG, I think we as a, just like we're talking about the forum, that we could do a little bit of work as a commission that might outreach to more groups that might, particularly it might want to have a project within it, and we might have more competition for it and get more money out if we kind of got out there. So that's just a thought as we go forward.
I mean, even in this formal document, it talks about how many obstacles and challenges there are with trying to do an application for a CDBG. So that just seems so strange to me. I mean, here you have this formal thing. So you're talking about, come on, everybody apply, you know, and then people do apply, and then they're like, well, no, sorry,
we could do an educational event. So the other day I went to a continuum of care meeting, and we can talk about this next month, too, in depth a little more, because we are having Connie Wilkerson from the continuum of care to come and present on the 10-year plan. But she can also talk about some of the work that's going on in a larger, you know, countywide community sense. So I was at their meeting the other day because they had a couple of interesting things, a report from the nurses who have been doing a survey about homelessness. But also the city of Medford has some new money from their marijuana tax and their construction excise tax that they have passed.
Which we want.
So they have, what did she say, $1.7 million altogether.
A lot of marijuana.
Well, they've
shops.
Got marijuana money. So this is combined marijuana money, CDBG, and their construction excise tax money.
And that brings in a hump for them in the hundreds of thousands.
Right.
Of
I mean, and they get a lot more money than we
so
do.
So together it's
$1.7 million. And I was like, dang, that seems like a lot of money to put towards stuff. So they had the big report put together by a consulting firm to talk about like how should they deal with this money and what would be the best ways to help you know, homeless populations and the service gaps, because that's really what they're trying to target their marijuana money toward. But it made me think, we don't look at our money in that same way. Like, we kind of silo out our money because CDBG does have requirement, you know. I mean, we found out during that housing trust fund thing that it's like, yeah, money with no strings, money with a lot of strings. Let's get the money with no strings. But we could do the same thing to some extent. We could say, which is kind of our intention, we have this CDBG money and we have this housing trust fund money. So next year will be the time when we will be offering both CDBG and housing trust fund money. And together, I mean, it's $200,000 in trust fund. Well, $247,000 in trust fund money, because we have the leftovers from last time. And then this time we'll have, like, almost $400,000 in CDBG.
But aren't you still going to go out in January?
Well, yes, in January. Mm-hmm. So right.
Oh, in January. Okay.
So altogether, I mean, we'll have $600,000,
okay.
Which seems like a lot of money to me.
Yeah, it does for us.
On the CDBG route, I mean, we did have Food Angels come in and get it. And that is probably the tiniest, least bureaucratic thing that, I mean, it's got a lot of services, but it has no...
So here's the thing that's really nice about being a small town that doesn't get a lot of CDBG money. I can spend a lot of time with grantees.
That's wonderful.
I can really help. I mean, St. Vincent de Paul, when they first applied, they were like, we don't want government money. We don't want to have to report. I had to go line by line through our contract. And they actually took things and highlighted it and said, we don't want to do this. Do we have to really do this? And I was like, well, let's find out. And some things they don't have to do because they're not big enough. So I can really spend time with people to make it easier for them. I can't waive requirements, but I can help get them through the process.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Well, let me just say that what I was looking at is a way that we can really be aggressively outreaching to people and agencies about not the barriers to CDBG, but the what are they? I mean, we've done some great work with
well, that. And that's where I'm thinking with the consolidated plan, is there a way that we can do the public outreach piece that we need to do for the consolidated plan as a both an educational outreach piece? We're also supposed to outreach to agencies. I mean, we could combine those things, and then with the money that we have moving forward, we could probably combine those two events into a process where we do, here's what we have, here's what we're wanting to accomplish, what are you seeing that's needing? So there may be an opportunity where we can mesh all those things together.
We've gone over by 7 minutes, but we'll...
That's on you.
Raise my hand here.
So anyway, we can have this as a discussion item at a future meeting, and certainly as we get farther into the consolidated plan process, we can maybe hone that down a bit.
Okay. So moving on, thank you, and we've approved our plan. We're now talking about the SB 608. Everybody's familiar with that. That's the rent stabilization and just cause legislation that went through. Mm-hmm. Our plan was to do a educational program that would bring in a variety of folks that could benefit from really knowing what that ought, from landlords to renters to businesses to whoever is renters. And so that's our job at this point, is to look at how do we want to do it with a subcommittee, what kind of timing do we want to look at.
We have to call them work groups now, or we
work
have to
groups.
Take minutes.
Right.
Work group.
Work groups.
Work group. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, would you be willing to work with the city of Medford on this and make it a larger event?
Would it be in Medford, or would it be here?
Well, I think we would want to have it at the college. I have heard that Medford
is... SOU or RCC?
SOU. Although we could do it at the HEC.
HEC is a pretty nice facility, but I'm not trying to push for that.
Well, originally I think this group was thinking it'd be nice to have it at the college. It's going to be in the summer, so there'll be more availability.
Yeah.
But rooms at the college cost money.
The Rogue River Room, like that?
Yeah,
that
and they give us a discount. So my question is, do you want to broaden this to bring in other partners who can help pay for things, but also because there is an interest on the part of Medford to also want to do this? So it would be silly to duplicate it.
Right.
I have a question. I'm also a landlord. But it seems pretty straightforward to me, the requirements. And I'm not saying this is a bad idea, but it sounds overly complicated to present the information in the law, mm-hmm. which is you could do on a flyer for that. I mean,
and there is a flyer for that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I've been sending
so
it.
So what?
People.
Right, we're gonna fill a day.
Well, I don't think we need
to
have a day.
Who are we doing this for? Tenants primarily?
Both. I think we were thinking we would target both landlords and tenants. And that it would be more broad than just SB 608, I think, is the question, is how broad do we want to make it? So far, I mean, I think just based on what we had talked about earlier, I have talked to Deborah Lee from the Center for Nonprofit Legal Services, and she's very much in favor of serving on a panel because they're getting a lot of calls. Mm-hmm. So while it seems on the face, especially with the lovely handout that Pam Marsh sent me, that it should be easy to understand, but we are getting a lot of calls about, does this apply to me? Do I need to be doing this? Do you have sample lease agreements? Which, no, why would I have that?
They're out. The new leases are...
But people are feeling confused, and so I think it would be an opportunity to provide a venue for landlords to get some clarification, but also for tenants to know what their rights are. So that's the part that I think Deborah Lee is getting hammered with, is that there are all these tenants who are now calling her saying, you know, this happened to me, and is this a violation of SB 608? Mm-hmm. And so it kind of feels like there's a lot of confusion, and maybe
we
can
help. One of the sources of confusion also has been the campaigns that went on both sides.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they accelerated the problems right. and the values of it when right. it's really kind of in the middle. And so people, just from what they may have seen through that lens,
there's a lot of misinformation
kind of like
too.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. So this is why people call me about lease agreements. People do not understand the difference between state legislation and local legislation. Mm-hmm. And so that is...
Because we don't teach civics in high school.
It is very... And so I'm always telling people, you know, I understand that you're within the city, but the city actually has no purview over this. Like, we can't enforce any of this. And if you wanted to litigate it, like... You know, our code compliance officer can't go out there and enforce it because he can only enforce mm-hmm. municipal code, and that's not in the mm-hmm. municipal code. That is the Oregon State mm-hmm. code, mm-hmm. and now you'll have to go to a lawyer to take care of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which then makes it seem like you're passing the buck.
Yeah, I think it's important because I feel like from your background especially, you're probably a lot more forward-thinking than or understanding of this than probably the general public, and a lot of times fear is instilled on both sides, and just bringing in education is so helpful. And I would say that probably there's a lot of landlords and tenants that are confused, and even maybe the flyer doesn't help them to understand it.
Even getting to the flyer, like most people mm-hmm. don't know that is just an available resource. The other piece that is a question for me is there a space for fair housing in this discussion? And so that's something that I think people disagree on, I guess, because it's like if it's purely landlord-tenant, then that's not really a fair housing issue. But are there issues that that tenants or landlords could bring up that are actually fair housing issues and have nothing to do with SB 608? And is that something that you would anticipate for this forum? And I guess it depends on what the format is. Is it going to be people sort of talking about the issues that they're mm-hmm. experiencing? And then would it be, well, that really isn't a landlord-tenant issue. That is
I'm sort of
discrimination.
Picturing, you know, that manufactured housing.
Mm-hmm. I was too.
Yeah. Manufactured housing conference and with the panel and then the people in the audience, and then, you know, we're all taking in all that with so much great information.
Yeah.
I just am not that familiar. I mean, I really need to go to this. you don't want me setting this up.
Well, and if we do, I mean, I think having a smaller work group, I mean, I think coming, mm-hmm. talking to, if we do want to bring in partners like the City of Medford, mm-hmm. Center for Nonprofit Legal Services, then I think they're going to have some pieces that they may want to bring to the table mm-hmm. that they may want addressed. And so even coming up with a sort of idea of exactly what we want, you know, it could be subject to change.
Well, I hope who's ever on that work group works out the venue issue mm-hmm. because it seems like we wouldn't draw very many Ashland renters to Medford so much.
Yeah, I did want to add my two cents to that.
What?
Well, I wanted to add my two cents that if we're going to partner with Medford, I would like us to make sure it is hosted in Ashland because I feel like our purpose is to serve this community, and just knowing my friends and my neighbors, like, we were just joking around the other day that like people act like they have to pull out their passport when we're going to Medford. A lot of times we just don't go to events in Medford because we don't want to leave.
It's 12 miles.
And it's not like that, like anywhere else that I've lived. I do the same thing. But I want us to have something that's accessible where people in Ashland want to go, so that we're really supporting this community.
It may be that we can't do something with them. It may be that we end up doing separate events. But
there may be also the idea of bringing in resource people. Maybe happier doing two events,
right?
And mm-hmm. so we work together, but because we're attracting the same resource base, but we still do one here and one there. Yeah. They have to do it twice.
Some people
might
prefer that.
People would like to do it twice. So,
So if we put it in place and book the room, and then invite them to partner with us to our event, mm-hmm. then. It's an Ashland.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
If you want to play with us, it's here on this date.
But I was hoping. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you think we'd have the capacity to do one in Ashland and then and eventually do one in Medford as well. Yeah, kind of like they can help us out with the Ashland one and then mm-hmm. we can help them out with the Medford one.
I mean, it would essentially be the same event and we could have the same speakers and they could just do it here and then do it there
right.
the
and
next
there might
day.
Be people
or even
who
the same day.
Missed one in Ashland
yes.
that would drive to the library and pick it up or vice
right.
versa.
Right. And then so we could have it on the same day at different times so that if people could go right. in the morning, they mm-hmm. could go in the afternoon maybe.
So what it sounds like is that there's a lot of support for this direction.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need is that work group.
And
I have one more question.
Okay.
I question doing it in July and August. It's just, I know I'm gone a lot this summer. That a lot of people are gone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way we could push it to September.
Yeah, end of September after school.
I have to ask, so the reason that we are looking at July and August is because we were hoping that Jeff Golden and or Pam Marsh could be on the panel, and those are the times when they are not in Salem.
Oh.
No,
and that's what
we did do a housing forum at the library that was hugely attended towards the end of August when there was
true.
A lot of
that's
organizing
really
around it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people leave and some people stay. So
I was really working around their schedule is kind of what I was looking at. And then...
But if there happened to be smoke again this summer,
nobody's
going to...
That's true. And that is the time of
the on the September side, what happens is everybody that ever wanted an organ to have an event saves it up for
mm-hmm.
after Labor Day. And so there's this big, gigantic clog of events that you're competing with. So that's another...
Maybe we could try and
have it
in July as well. Just to try and maybe get in ahead of the smoke.
It's true. Early July.
Sorry.
Doesn't give us much time, though.
Right. Or just as early as possible.
Yeah.
I'm still... having a hard time getting my hands around what functionally we want to do. If I were doing it as a former organizer, I would direct it at the tenants. The tenants I talked to didn't have any concept that there was a change, hadn't read about it in the paper.
Sure.
I'm assuming there's many, many tenants that don't know this is happening, and my belief is that we need to arm them with this information, because when a problem occurs next year or the following year, it's going to be an eviction that's not allowed, it's the timelines and all that kind of stuff, and nobody's going to police this. It's just going to come by a renter complaining that they that the rules were violated.
Yeah.
And so the purpose for me is to get that information, that adversarial information, in the hands of renters in Ashland. And most of the people, the landlords, are passive. They're doing it through property management. I'm sure all the property managers know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, the Southern Oregon Rental Owners Association.
And you might have somebody
training
that missed the boat, not a property manager. But it's just really saying that the laws have changed. This is this. And I don't... It may be a draw to have Pam there or Jeff, but are they just going to say... What the new rules are?
I
mean,
I
you need a PowerPoint or mm-hmm. something that just says it with a handout. And,
okay. You're up.
So several weeks ago, I don't know how long ago now, Jackie and I were at a chamber greeters meeting and talked to two different realtors there to just say, would you be interested in this? And they jumped all over it. They would sponsor it. They would like, we want this. We would want
Rogue
to bring our
Realty,
people to this.
Linda
at Rogue Realty.
And I think that would be a real, like, gesture of goodwill and could, I don't know, kind of, like, get people somewhat feeling, like, less in opposition and less, like, there's, like, some sort of tribalist sides to the whole debate as well. And I think it also would help people be really more, a lot more sympathetic and maybe even more interested in getting involved in the whole thing when they realize how many decades of struggle went into just getting SB 608 passed, and then how many more, you know, other opportunities are in the future as well. It could really help in getting people plugged in to be volunteers in the community and all that.
I would just say, besides it, you know, who we want to address, the other way is how do we address them? So, for example, having child care and have it at a certain time gives a little bit of advantage to renters to participate in it.
Maybe what we would do, what we could do, is split the sessions so that one is for landlords and realtors and one is for tenants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or you could do a breakout.
Or we could do breakouts.
Yeah. I like the idea of bringing them all together in one room so that it's an us-them thing.
Yes.
But you could do breakout sessions for each.
Yeah, specific to
although
questions.
The content is kind of the same.
Question and answer sessions, maybe. So realtors are, interestingly enough, a group who does want more information.
Yeah.
I know there have been trainings targeted to them, and it's specifically because they have people who are wanting to buy rentals or sell rentals, and they need to know what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does have a lot of bearing for them.
It'd be good if you could come to Greeters and just do a 40-second, come to Greeters on a Friday morning and do a 40-second on, we're really looking for sponsors, this is what the event is, this is what our, you know, you would be able to quickly do that because it's all in your ken. And it's the Greeters schedule is up on
the chamber
website.
Oh.
And so tomorrow, for instance, we're at the Ashland Culture of Peace Commission office, but it's the Thrive Academy, which is Will Wilkerson, I guess is his name. So it moves around, you know, it's at a different location each Friday.
Well, and maybe when we get this sort of more settled.
But you can have a sign-up.
Yeah.
And the realtors really want to give some money and sponsor and provide cookies or food or something.
See, that would be great, because that's the sort of stuff that we can't do.
Right.
I mean, we have a budget, right? This is for you guys who don't know. We have a budget, but it's very little. And we tend to use it on food for us.
I still owe you $10 for pizza.
You
I didn't give you any money.
I remember.
I know.
So, I mean, and that's where my concern is if we do end up using SOU and we need to pay them for that space, then we're going to need some partners.
I have one other concern. I'm afraid that most of the people that need to have this information aren't going to come to something like this. How can we make it, how can we incentivize it? And I'm not meaning to talk down to people who are renting and having three jobs to support themselves and don't have the time and don't read the newspaper and don't check things like this out.
So one of the things about that housing forum that I think was really successful in speaking about partners is that we had a partnership or part of the planning was done by Rogue Action Center. And so they had a lot of involvement and they really worked on drumming up people to come. And I think one of the ideas is if we did target tenants for the training, for the educational piece, that we would ask that Jesse Sharp or Michelle.
Southern Oregon Tenants Union, too. Right? I mean,
I don't know about them.
Yeah, that's who they are. Anyway. But they're Rogue Action Center. There are other partners that do work in that area that would help, I think.
So, maybe they could bring a bit of that perspective of like what we would need to do. Because you guys are.
I just actually a couple weeks ago was elected the board chair. So of Rogue Action Center. So.
Okay, so now really here's the hard part. We got 5 minutes, and what we want to do is try to find out if we got at least 3 people that would work up on this. See, this is the hard. This is where it hits the road here.
All right.
That one.
Joseph. I'd work with you, Linda, on the greeter kind of a thing, but this is not my Ken area here.
So we can. Okay, Sarah, I saw a hand there. Was that was
she dealt with one
two,
here.
Two new people. You know who I was thinking about was Gina.
Gina would be great.
She is such a
she'll get voluntold
event person.
She is an event person. Yes, that would work.
Is she still on the commission? I feel like I never see her now.
Yeah, she is.
She's so busy.
So can we do with two and Gina, and then I can be kind of ex officio or something when we do that. Does that sound all right with you?
Sounds good.
That's great.
Yeah.
And obviously, I will do a lot.
Okay.
Will you be coordinating kind of the finding the time to meet and all that?
Yes, I can do a doodle poll and see what would work for people. And, you know, I just want you guys to tell me what you want me to do. I mean, I could do it, right? But I want you guys to tell me what you want.
Well, I would say congratulations. We got two new people, and they've already... And with Gina, really, you've got an experienced eventer, but I think you've got experienced eventers here,
and
too.
And getting young tenants, you know, to come out, that'd be awesome.
Really cool. I'll save it for the work group.
Never mind. Okay. Yeah, we could discuss this all the rest of the week.
Yeah, right.
That's why we need to parcel it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So the next part is the social service grant debrief and strategic plan update, next steps. So everybody may know, but we got our recommendations approved.
That was nice. Wasn't that wonderful? That felt good. No changes.
That's great.
Isn't that great?
And Tom's little outline that he provided us was helpful because they did have questions, particularly around the notion of not funding some people.
St. Vincent de Paul. They always have to bring up St. Vincent de Paul.
Well, St. Vincent de Paul, but we had three people that we didn't give any.
But you addressed that, Rich. I thought you did a great job of that.
We all did. Mm-hmm. And because we did it in a good way, they said, okay, I got that. And there was appreciation of what we did.
Dennis Slattery especially. Right. Because, Dennis was here when we were first starting to figure out conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. And so he got to see us that we were very serious about how we were going to do this. And so he said in the council meeting that he just had such respect for the people who were for this group. Yeah. It really felt good, didn't it, Rich?
It was good to you. And I liked it because they didn't just accept it willy-nilly. They looked at it and they asked questions and they got involved, and then they were where they needed, where we all needed.
It was really awesome.
That was, I think, really good.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It is. And we want to kind of build on that. And part of that, then, is to look at a real evaluation, at least for a while, of how that did. So that's what's on the agenda right now.
Well, and this is the third time this group has done this process. The first time, I think the council made some tweaks, because I think there were some that weren't funded, and they were like, oh, you have to fund them. And then the next time was a little bit disastrous. And then this time was great, but also I think each time the process gets a little better. The process gets, you know, more comfortable for you guys. I think the first time we had, like, the worst presentation meeting schedule we've ever had. It was so full and busy, and nobody got enough time, and nobody felt good enough.
Oh.
And I think, so each time we go through this process, we sort of learn what needs to be done differently to help you guys get to the conclusions you need to get to, and the grantees to have a better time.
It was really helpful having the extra meetings.
Yes. Oh, the work group meetings, or whatever we call those.
The extra meetings.
Yes.
That was so helpful. Didn't we have two?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we should have those every year.
I think we should too. That really helped me a lot.
It helped to go into the presentations with an idea of already in my mind of what I wanted to do, knowing I could change it, but they had convinced me you should get more money. You know, was sort of the attitude I had about it, and it made it work better. And we did make changes.
And I also think it makes the presentations go better to sort of come to knowing what you want them to address and letting them know. Mm-hmm. That first year, you know, they just came and presented their application and then the question, and it just, It took forever, but they didn't have enough time to address everything, and the commissioners felt rushed, and then everybody left, and they were like, well, that was super unsatisfying. I didn't get the information I needed. So I think being able to talk about it in advance and say, these are the things I wanted to know more about in this application than addressing it.
Well, and plus Tom, with Tom's information, it was so helpful.
Yes, that was super.
To know, you know, how many people in Ashland is this grant, you know, actually affecting. That was huge. And then knowing what had been given before, and it was just so clear. The one thing on the form, though, I do want to mention, it's on page 9, where it says number of Medford or Ashland. Yeah. Uh-huh. So number of, I really think that needs to be redone, where that maybe it says something like there's a line and it's Medford and they could check Medford, mm-hmm. and then there's maybe a slash and there's Ashland with a line, mm-hmm. and they could check Ashland, but they can't check them both because they have to check whole program, I guess. I don't know.
We don't need, the reason that it's on there is because it's a combined.
It's a combined form.
Well, somehow.
We can just take it off.
That'd be great.
Well, no, I think we want to know how many are in Ashland, though.
Ashland, right.
Yeah. Yes. But just number of Ashland.
Yes.
Number in Ashland. Yeah.
So, and what'll happen is Jan from United Way puts this application together and puts it out, and then Medford and Jan and I all meet together and we go in and tell Jan what we want. So we can tell Jan whatever we want on this application, mm-hmm. and she will put it in there.
To make it personal to Ashland.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be great.
So, and that's why these are in here, so that you guys can put things in here that you want to see that will help you make a better decision. Because I think that's where we're at now. The process is getting really tight. We know the meeting schedule. You know, all those pieces are really good. But what are you not getting from the application that would help you make a good decision?
Several other next in priority is this strategic plan one. It's all over the place. When I did that list or spreadsheet, a third of the people made up their own term. So you really had to, you could derive it if you read the proposal and say, well, this falls under this. This falls, but people didn't adhere to that. I don't know how to change the form, but maybe it's very clear in the explanatory information. It has the strategic goals.
It's cut off though. So it started, I noticed on the applications that on that very first part when it said what is the strategic area, it only took a few words and then it just cut off.
Okay.
So it filled in but didn't make it. The line wasn't long enough.
Okay. And we can make that line longer.
Yeah.
Some people also ignored the administrative costs. And that was kind of frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I guess we could, I'm not sure how to clarify that for them.
Some of the organizations are so small in some sense that it's difficult to separate out the administration from the, I mean, their administrator is their provider. And anyway, that's.
And some had, are like.
Committee works.
Anyway, they're, I'd like, I think we need. We have a committee, Aaron and
Heidi
and me, and we had one meeting, I think, two meetings. and I think we could work on the forum.
So that would be a question. Do you want to address this and then bring it back to the group, the changes you would recommend?
Yeah, we can do that. Our work group, you mean?
Yeah.
And one thing that I wanted to include, which I think is included in here, is the contract.
Make the application pull the detail that you gave us.
Yes. No,
instead
that's what
I was instead
thinking.
Of you having to pull it from all the extrapolation, have it somehow easy in the application so it...
Mm-hmm. Well,
and what is
all
your
I did
actual
is flip through the station and find it.
But it was, they are hard to find, and they're not clear. And
well,
like,
after you do 15, you know.
Well, we'll just have you do it every time. No. No.
So,
but maybe there's a way to streamline
it. I think so.
I think the streamline.
I have one other
applicants
thing.
Applicants find it difficult, too.
The first two times, I was of the belief that we had this pot of money and had no idea about priorities other than our framework. Mm-hmm. And people submitted what they always do. The organization does this service, so they said, fund this service. And I thought for a long time that it would be better for us to have a priority or a couple of priorities and publicize those, and people could write, like most grants,
you
have an idea
front.
What the funder wants. And but when we did the analysis, it seemed like there was a much broader variation. So I personally kind of backed off, but I still think that we ought to have some suggestions about project, not the full-blown project, but the service that is a priority in Ashland this cycle. And I haven't done anything on that, and I don't know if we have, but it seems like that would be a worthwhile thing before this comes up again, to have some really tangible guidelines for what we wanted to see.
And doesn't that come out of the strategic plan, though, from the city?
Yeah.
I mean, so you'd want it to flow down.
We do. Part of this, I mean, it's not just the city isn't like the city council is.
Right. But I mean, doesn't that get sort of flushed out? So you kind of have those five different areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess I'm just wondering, what do you mean, Tom? Like, if you have five areas, are you saying maybe you take the two that are the
most? We have housing or homeless and mentoring or, you know.
We do have the leeway to do that in our strategic plan, which was kind of why we had those other meetings and we did the survey, sort of target in what does the community think are the bigger priorities. And strangely, food and healthcare were, like, surprising.
They're pretty broad areas, and I guess what I'm saying, I'll have the broad areas, but have some...
like this year, we are preferencing or giving extra points to certain
have.
Things.
Yeah, we have X amount of money.
Okay, everybody, can we put a little pause on this one? We can come back, but we have two people who are going to leave.
Well, that's great.
Sorry. And what I was going to suggest is that we go to not the liaison reports, but the announcements. I know I have one. And if other people have key announcements or checking in on the next meeting, we could do that now.
Okay, sure. Did you want to do your announcement?
I'll do my announcement real fast if I just can hand it up. There is a Ashland Housing Forum this Saturday at 6 o'clock at the library that the World Action Center interns and people have been working on. So I'm just going to pass these around. And it'll be an opportunity to really kind of bring discussion about what our next steps in terms of affordable housing might be. And so I just wanted to get that out there. It'll be, I think, a well-done program with lots of both resource people and opportunity for input.
Did you guys have any announcements that you wanted to share?
I don't think so.
I already made mine.
I have a couple questions. Is this the right time for that?
Go for questions.
Like other people to make some announcements.
Right.
I have three. One of them you actually brought up, which is the checking in on the affordable housing unit.
Yes.
But
the condominium.
Yeah. But then the other two was, one is, I feel out of the loop if there's been an update on the community center.
Oh. No, I do not know if there's an update.
In terms of it being used. And then the third one was an update on winter shelter for next year. And what was...
I can do that.
Okay.
But the community center, I mean, with it's closed. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
So I don't think,
they're getting...
Oh, go ahead.
I think they're getting bids because the whole...
They have to take the whole roof off.
Yeah, they have to take the whole roof off.
Okay, so the whole roof has to come off, and then...
It's a major, major
remodel
that they're going to have to do for the community center.
It is literally structurally not sound right now.
Okay.
The wall is not attached to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Right.
At any moment, just the way it sits, it could fall.
So do they have a time frame for that?
I haven't heard.
So I think they've had people, engineers, looking at it, and they're getting bids on what people think.
And money will be an issue.
Yep.
It's going to
be the money for that.
Especially with the budget stuff that's going on.
We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars for that, to make it back, bring it back.
The plan is to fix it, but they got to come up with the money somehow.
I wonder if we could somehow come up with money if it's being used for... different services.
Well, that has been floated. I think Rich Rosenthal brought it up at the CDBG hearing, and we could, but it would be restricted from that time forward to be primarily.
Okay.
And so I think, that came up with the Pioneer Hall a couple years ago, and those are both not owned, but run by the Parks Department, and I think they just really don't want it to be
restricted.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the CDBG thing is tricky because it's not a low-income area. We can use it for historic preservation, but not for maintenance, but for flawed, which it is, in fact. I mean, it's just, it was built in, like, 1926, and they just built things differently then. And now it needs to be rebuilt. So... anyway, we're still waiting to find out.
Okay.
I can quickly do the three things on the shelter if you're interested. So that's, ORA is sort of the umbrella organization that the money's flowing through, and the management is going out to all these 300-plus volunteers in the community all doing it. So we've just hired a new executive director, and that's Michelle Arellano. Right. So she's just back from Peru, and she's hitting the ground, and so her main focus is going to be the shelter, getting the shelter all ready. Okay. Secondly, we're going to be sending out, we're doing a job search for a new program manager for the shelter, shelter program manager. And so we hope to have that accomplished by August.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's a lot to be done between August and November when we get going. And third, we're working on 2082 East Main, which is the Rogue Valley Church location.
So they are going to be
We are all being positive about this. So we had to go back to the county, who's never done this before. They've never approved something like this. So they're all willy-nilly about it. And we got a 45-day extension. And Kelly Matting is really helping us because she was head of the planning department in Medford and knows Danny, the county supervisor. And so she feels pretty confident, also working with Pam Knorr, who's the head of access. And they all want this to succeed. So everyone is being hopeful and positive, and we're getting that building ready. And
that's a good location for it.
So, but stay tuned because, and then I'm the liaison with the ORA board to all the shelter coordinators. So I'm working with Bob Morris and Heidi Parker and a whole group of people, Vanessa and Jason and...
Mm-hmm.
One glitch that's happened, and I'm just going to mention it here because I don't want it to blow up too badly. The shower laundry trailer, we got a new one, it came, it wasn't working correctly, we sent it back, it's up in Eugene. They hired some workers to, make it correctly remodeled. And they hacked the bottom. They actually took the major pipes and tanks and things, stole them, somebody did. So now it's been cannibalized. It's sitting up in Eugene. We've put in thousands of dollars into trying to make this work. We had to send back the Grayback, which is the forestry division shower trailer that's been at, you know this.
Right, because it was there Tuesday.
Yes.
Well, there's Tuesday, yeah.
Okay, that's it. So the awful thing is, so, you know, we're not going to have a laundry shower trailer for 4 to 6 weeks. It could be 8 weeks.
That's different information that I got Tuesday. So we were telling our clients, so to speak, that it would maybe be 1 or 2 weeks after this.
Rich, can I just share with them really quickly? I should have brought flyers because I do have them. Next week is Project Community Connect event, Friday at the Medford Armory, if you guys.
And so we're 4 o'clock next time.
June 25, 4 here.
Do we have a presence there?
The commission doesn't, but you know, I always recommend that if you haven't ever been to one, you should go check it out because it's pretty awesome.
It is great, super dope.
So is the Grayback trailer not because they're getting ready to use it for the forestry
division needs it back. Bye, Sarah. Yeah. Bye, Joseph. So glad you can stay. Yeah, so we had to send it back, and the 1 to 2 weeks. No way, because it's major, it's just a mess, and I'm so sorry, but I'm in the middle of all the discussions with the board and what they're trying to do. I see everyone trying to do what they can, including throwing money at this thing to try to make it work, and it's extremely frustrating. And then for Vanessa, you know, and she's just got back from Australia, and so she's hitting the ground, and then she got a 30-day eviction notice on her office, at her seat. So they don't have to tell you, apparently, on a commercial.
I don't think they've been there a year.
That's probably right. So it's a commercial property. All they have to be doing is remodeling, and they can just kick you out. And so they have
different, really.
Is it the Cropper?
What?
Building, the Cropper building?
It's by the dance studio on
the one that has the orange doors.
It's by KSKQ.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah.
It's right diagonal from KSKQ.
In terms of the shower trailer.
Yes.
Jackson County Search and Rescue has a shower trailer that they use for their search and rescue people when they're out doing that stuff. You might contact them and see if you can use it temporarily until your shower trailer is ready.
Well, that'd be awesome. Because that's the kind of thing. So what we're going to do.
When they have long searches.
Yeah, which is not very often.
Okay. Yeah. So Jackson County Search and Rescue.
I'm pretty sure they have a shower trailer. So I would have somebody contact them.
Okay. And
ask.
If I contacted you, would you be able to give me a phone number?
That's all right.
Okay, but what we're going to do is we're going to sit down with a group of people like Jason and Vanessa and different, you know, the Heidi Parkers and, you know, and rep me, you know, representatives from the Aura board and problem solve.
Yeah.
And that's what we're looking for, is that kind of problem solving.
They might
solving.
Be able to loan it to you, even just on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we
that'd
borrow
be awesome.
It this Tuesday? And
that'd be awesome. Yeah. So anyway.
Okay, I think we're going to kind of switch back to where we were, which we were looking at the grant awards process. And
did you get all your questions? You had three.
The only last one was what you mentioned about the housing.
Right. Oh, so if we want to finish with updates, I can give you an update on that.
Right.
So essentially, the people who came last time from the HOA said that the person who complained about the HOA is not being genuine and has rented their unit to another person, which is in violation of the Affordable Housing Agreement. However, the Affordable Housing Agreement's remedy is legal. You know, it's all like, then we go to court and we force you to do whatever, or we revoke your planning action, which is why you even have an affordable unit. So I had to go through the legal department because that's all a legal matter, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the people off the record were really unhappy with me because I didn't go to that apartment and knock on the door and tell the lady she has to leave, which I shared with them that, yes, I do not have a contract with that lady that I can enforce. I have a contract with the homeowner, and I can enforce that, but the means of enforcing that is going through a legal process.
Mm-hmm. And so, and I don't do that, right? So I have to go to the city attorney to go through a process with that homeowner to say, here's where we're at. And in the meantime, the complicating matter is that this homeowner really just wants to sell their unit, but they can't sell their unit until we change their resale restriction covenant, which is the whole purpose this was brought up to begin with, because they went to the city council to say, I have to take a huge loss because the HOA fees have gone up. And now I can't sell my unit for what I even paid for it. And nobody who can afford to buy it and who is deed restricted can buy it because they couldn't afford to live here either. And so they were waiting for us, the legal department, to make a new resale restriction covenant that they can sign so that they could sell it. And in the meantime, they rented it outside of this agreement, which then in turn brought in another legal process. So that's the challenge, I think. And I did address it with the homeowner and said, you know, you're in violation of this, and, you know, what is the remedy? And essentially the remedy is he really just wants to sell it. And when will we have our part ready? So then I had to go back to legal and say, okay, I don't know. Like, we obviously don't want to bring this to court, and this person, you know, has to make this person move, and they're willing to do that. But they would like to make this person move when they can put this on the market.
And they can what?
Put it on the market. Put their unit on the market.
Notice when he can put it on the market.
Because that person's going to have to move anyway, right?
Okay.
And potentially this person could, you know, buy this unit if it were available, maybe. So that's where we're at. Legal is has agreed with me that we will give them the resale restriction covenant that has been adjusted, so they can put it on the market, and at that time require them to give this person notice at the same time, but that we won't require the person to give them notice now because part of it is waiting for us, mm-hmm. our responsibility. And unfortunately for us, I mean, we have, you know, our main city attorney, Dave Lohman, and then Katrina, who is the assistant city attorney, and these things are not very high on their list of things they have to do.
No.
Right. So is this change in income restriction going to impact any of the other low-income units? Because it sounded like that's what they were saying.
Yes. So the two units that are in that complex are deed restricted. Actually, were deed restricted at the time through one agreement. So they will both be adjusted. Both of their agreements will be adjusted. And we had gone to the council and we had talked here about what that adjustment would be, which is essentially we're going to raise the maximum income limit mm-hmm. from 80 to 100% of area median income. With the belief that, or is it 120? I think it's 120. With the belief that someone in that income range can absorb a higher HOA.
HOA. It's probably 120.
Yeah, I think it is 120. In turn, it will allow that person to sell their unit for more.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to say, off the record, that there's a little bit of infighting going on there that seems a little retaliatory on both sides.
Okay.
And then I feel like they're doing this thing where they think I'm the one who's going to fix all that, which is funny because it's like, yeah, that's not my role at all. Like, I can't enforce somebody else's agreement. I can only enforce the one I have, and I only have a legal remedy to do it. So I think everyone's going to walk away fairly unsatisfied mm-hmm. from this.
Okay.
Nope.
mm-hmm. But that's not my problem.
No. That's just doing your job.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. where we're at.
So we've got the staff liaison out.
Yes.
One more question. Is there any movement at all on the large housing development on the
Oh, yeah, I wondered about that, too.
You know, it's funny that you should ask, because I heard that they are going to be submitting their application soon, and I was talking with their planner, emailing with their planner about some specifics. You know, the housing element is going to be read at first reading, and our old housing element references this strange table that I am not even going to pretend to understand, but there is this language that says you have to prove that you have a certain, less than a 5-year supply of certain types of land in the city to say that you need to annex more land in order to build this housing type.
They're trying to get rid of that, right?
Yes, because it's,
right.
Some people see it as a no-growth thing, some people see it as a smart growth thing, and some people see it as so confusing that we don't even know how to address it. Mm-hmm. And I'm in that group. And
that's
I never
bad.
Understand.
If you're in that group,
well,
we're
I'm
all
not
in
a
trouble.
Planner, though. And it's funny because Bill totally understands it because he was here when it was written. So, yes, we are trying to remove that language. But part of it is they want to annex multifamily land, and so they have to prove in their application that there's only so much multifamily land before they can ask to annex more. And it's that infill strategy that we all agree with, but then it just is complicated how to do it. So she was emailing me about, okay, so it shows on the chart that this is how much we have and that this is our year supply, and then is that going to change when the housing element happens? And the truth of the matter is, it's kind of not. Even though you're not going to have to show that anymore, we still have an infill policy. And it's going away. We're not updating it. So that was the big piece of the housing element that we worked on for a long time. Is like, are we still going to update this crazy table, or are we just going to say it's just going to be part of the buildable lands inventory?
So that's all county where they're looking.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So they need to annex.
They have to annex.
They have
yeah.
to annex. And then they have to meet all these other requirements too, which have nothing to do with us really. But I mean. They do, but not like housing planning stuff. So the housing element passing will be helpful to mm-hmm. them in that they may not be held to the same standard. The bad news is that there's still sort of an infill policy about like, well, should we be annexing? I mean, it's cheaper and easier to build on this land than trying to make it work in these sort of tighter configurations. And that's not what we want, right? Like, we don't want it to just keep sprawling out because it's cheaper and easier. But so anyway, I was sharing with her that, no, the housing element is not going to have an updated table, and the BLI has not been buildable lands inventory.
I like the idea, though, of more affordable housing on the two ends of town. Mm-hmm. And then you still come in, and you still have the old
yeah.
town mm-hmm. and the plaza and the railroad district and all that. You know,
well,
I
and
like
it's
that.
Hard. The infill projects for large-scale multifamily is hard. I mean, there's no low-hanging fruit left in this town.
Right. So it seems like we have to provide that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
on the both ends, works fine.
And I think, you know, it just depends. Their plan keeps changing and evolving. So I'm not sure what is going to come forward.
It's going to be more than a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they first presented, and I think Heidi and somebody else said, yeah, I don't see this happening in a year.
Yeah, it's a pretty
The annexation process is going to take quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by the rent that they mentioned. I'm curious if they're going to honor that rental. It was like $950, and I'm like,
oh, it was even low. Well, affordable. It was $650 to $750. Was
I mean,
that would
be
range.
Awesome. Like, I'd love to see that.
If they're coming under the affordable under they don't have any choice.
Yeah, no, they're going to be required.
It was like $650.
But I asked him the non-affordable unit,
yeah.
and he said something like $950 for a one bedroom. Which for a brand new place in Ashland is
I know,
really
that's pretty crazy.
Inexpensive.
Yeah.
Well, and
right.
I think that has something to do, when this is the part that I wasn't quite getting, and I guess this is the part that changes, which you didn't understand when he was explaining it, the sort of modular way, like he was like, well, it could be bigger, or you could change it to be bigger.
Yeah, I didn't like totally get that either.
You could knock out a wall. You could get 2 500 units and knock out a wall, and I thought, well, then you're going to have 2 kitchens? And
I know, yeah,
right,
that's what
exactly.
I was thinking.
2 kitchens seemed odd, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it made sense to me when he said it.
Yeah.
Well, you could have... I don't know.
Well,
but it would be like you'd have unit, and you could like say, okay, so I'm going to borrow a bedroom from this unit to make this a 2-bedroom.
And then that would become a 1-bedroom.
Oh, that makes sense.
That does make
sense. That makes sense.
Okay. And so I think that's the part of their design that keeps changing to try to make that more, accommodate that modular piece more. And so I think that's where like maybe the small unit could be the 6 and then the or
got
something
it.
I
yeah.
don't know. It was
his prices did sound really good and would help a lot the workforce housing issue in this town.
Yeah.
Yes.
A huge
yeah,
amount.
Because
it's a lot of units.
Yeah.
I'll just throw in my own little piece just about that. It's easy to ascribe the low income people to the edges Mm-hmm. We also need to recognize that we need them integrated into our community. So that's just...
It's just the bigness of it.
Yeah.
Do you object to the bigness of it?
Right. No, well, I understand that, but the, you know, they built Cabrillo Green in Chicago, and it was a...
Oh, that was
a humanitarian disaster. But it was big,
and
it had a lot of people. But so we just have to also think in Ashland, how do we get lower-income people in mixed in with other people,
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think we've done a great job in the city with the last, with, you know, Snowberry and... Well, you took us on the bus tour. I hope you bring back the bus tour.
Since we have one educational event this time, we'll have to do the next one. It'll be the bus tour. We'll have to cycle it every 2 years. Well, and I think, I mean, what I was saying about... There just isn't that much large... There aren't that many large pieces of multifamily zoned land that are buildable for developers to do large-scale multifamily housing inside the city anymore.
Right.
And that's why it's going to be, like, vertical housing or residential but commercial.
And you want it on the bus line. You want them to be easy to get in and out, you know, to get to the jobs. I mean, there's so... So there are good reasons, like
and
the triangle.
And our town isn't that big. Our town isn't that big. You know, from one end to the other, you can...
Well, you know, the other thing is just to think about mixed use. And so to the extent that there were some places in there that were expensive would be fine, in my mind.
Yeah, right.
How you have a mix
that's
of people
the best way
in
to go.
There.
Right? Yeah,
so
I agree.
Yeah,
it's totally what needs to happen.
Okay, so are we ready to... We're just going to have a last second about the social service process. So if nobody has anything else, I did have one. Just sort of like a question, but an announcement. And that was, I noticed that if we give more than $18,000 to a group, which we gave to two, the living wage ordinance comes into effect. And it's written into their contract that they have that. And, but there's also these sort of exemptions. So it's 10 or more workers. But it also, just because I just thought, I don't think ORA has, y'all don't have 10 workers.
Employees?
Employees.
No.
Not
so not when you get to FTE, no.
Well, anyway, so that is like one of the criteria. So for smaller, it doesn't kick in. But the other part was that the agency that, the St. Vincent de Paul isn't Ashland St. Vincent de Paul. The money goes to the big St. Vincent de Paul, which probably has 10 workers. But the other requirement is that they have to spend 50% of their time doing this work. So there's probably not any percentage of their time doing that work. But I just, the reason I raise it up is that because as we give this money out, we ought to recognize that if we got more and diverse people, that living wage requirement, which isn't enough, but it is in there, because I was part of putting it in there, and I just think that you don't want a place where you're funding people at low wages, which we often do. So
we're just now figuring out how to give health insurance to like our ED, and then we're going to eventually have three program managers. You know, one for the shelter and one for the Washington Street property and one for ACRC. We already do ACRC, so, so the whole health insurance.
Which counts as part of that living wage money. So
we're doing that.
That's how we, for some organizations, that is how they get to that amount of money, is it's your wages and benefits included. Because that's kind of...
So are there
very
others?
Good point,
well, it just got me excited looking at that. And so are there other things? Because we've basically gone through our liaison reports. Any other questions?
Are you on social service grants?
No, I was. If there's more of that, yes. Okay.
No. I'm wondering about. Achieving a relationship with the city council when our representative has missed all the two meetings. How do we deal with that?
Okay, well, the reason he hasn't been able to come, though, he's had other meetings
that have prevented him from being
able to
come.
They have to meet almost every night during the budget.
Yeah, it's been the budget meetings.
Yeah, because he's also on he's also on the ACPC board, and that we meet on Wednesdays, and so there's been a budget meeting every time. But it's been crazy. But the budget now it should ease up, and we should see him, and I can bug him.
Yeah, please.
I'll send him.
I gotta say, we had coffee yesterday, so we're kind of like connected a little bit.
That's good.
And he was like, obviously, very supportive of what we've all done.
Yeah.
But you're correct that we should make sure that we're getting our liaison, our council person here.
I think it would be helpful to send out a note right away to people who weren't here about the time change for the next meeting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To all of us, so we're all in the same
loop. Yeah, we get it on our calendar.
Loop.
Yeah.
Okay.
I personally really like that part.
Somebody will be
ending the 6. I love that part.
Yeah, that's a nice time, actually.
Looks good for me, too.
I know. I'm hungry.
I know. That's what happens. Okay.
Well, if there aren't any other questions, comments, we'll adjourn the meeting. And thank you.
All right, nice having some new youngins around.
Some younger people.
I know.
Yeah.
I love that. Although it's so funny because she really looks young to me, and then when she was telling me, she's like, "Well, we lived in Portland for 9 years." And then I had kids, and now my son is whatever, and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she looks a lot younger.
She graduated 20 years ago.
I know.
Yeah, so she's my age. I'm 37,
Yeah. Well, you look young too, girl.
Yes, good. I wanted to let everyone know also, it's a personal announcement, but a few of you got invited because your ordination